Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 22nd of August. Our guest this hour is a pretty well-known mystery writer, and now he's going to be known as a pretty well-known dog rescue writer. His name is David Rosenfeld, and he's the author of Dog Tripping, 25 Rescues, 11 Volunteers, 3 RVs, on our canine cross-country adventure. He writes early in the book that as the last decade of the 20th century began, his life was, very little physical energy, a little racquetball, taking it easy. He was writing and doing things on his own schedule. Fast forward to now, he and his wife, Debbie Myers, have 25 dogs. And it's a relatively low number when taken in context of the last 17 years. It certainly represents a small percentage of the 4,000 dogs we have saved. The story of the dogs is really touching and written so tenderly. And the story is remarkable because these volunteers, many of whom Debbie and David didn't know, agreed to accompany them on a cross-country journey. They were moving from California to Maine. So they had all these volunteers, all these dogs, as you can imagine, it could have been chaotic, but it wasn't. It's amazing the whole thing happened. So he writes about it in this book. We'll be welcoming phone calls for David. He's an Edgar and Seamus Award nominated author of 5 standalone thrillers and 11 previous Andy Carpenter novels. They now live in Maine with a pack of dogs they have rescued. And it's a great story, and we're happy to have David with us. We welcome phone calls for him. All of you dog rescuers or people who are interested in doing this, please call this hour. 800-486-8655 is the number. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Hello, David.
Hello. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good.
I'm most known as a dog lunatic.
That's okay.
That's the proper way to put it.
That's really okay. Well, little did you know what that first date with Debbie was going to turn out to be, right?
Downhill ever since.
Tell me about the first date, because it was an indication of who she was, which was a good thing.
Yes, we were on a blind date, and we went to a movie and barely said anything because we just met just before the movie. And when the movie ended, I invited her to dinner. And she said, no, she had to go give eye medicine to her dog. And I've heard the eye medicine story before from women. So. But it
right.
turned out to be true, actually.
Yeah. And then you were a guy who didn't have a dog. It sounded like a good idea. But it is remarkable to me that you went from puppyless to a guy who was just going to shelters and rescuing these dogs and helping people and driving cross country and driving from Texas to California. You just entered it in such a whole way, didn't you?
Yeah, it's been, like I say, it's been downhill ever since that first date. But Debbie's a complete lunatic. I mean, she makes me look normal when it comes to dogs. And we lost her. She had a golden retriever that died. And after her death, we started volunteering at an animal shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And when you volunteer at a shelter in Southern California and you realize how horrible it is, then you sort of get involved. But we took getting involved to a sort of a whole new level.
Yeah, you sure did. And some of the parts of the book are really kind of funny, how you deal with dog poop in the backyard. I mean, that's a chapter we'll get to in a moment. But she had a hard time going to a shelter and not coming back home with 3 dogs or 4 dogs, elderly dogs mostly, right?
She goes into a shelter, it's like it's Bloomingdale's. She just keeps pointing to dogs that she wants.
Right.
I was just on a book tour for 2 weeks and came home to 6 extra dogs.
No. Did you really?
Yeah. Yes.
Wow. So how many do you have now?
We have 25 now.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. She just can't help herself, really.
She does. Well, it's not so bad in Maine. In Maine, it's actually pretty good. But in California, you go to a shelter, and if you don't take that dog, nobody will.
Mm-hmm.
It gets sort of compelling. You sort of have to do it.
So tell me about why you decided and how difficult it was, because this is an extremely complicated enterprise the two of you started some years ago.
Are you talking about the move or the rescue operation?
Well, the whole thing, your lives, But I was talking about the rescue operation. You had a vet who had to check all these animals, medications to give them, places for them to stay at the house, and finding homes for them. It was a full-time job.
Yeah, it really was. We rescued about 4,000 dogs.
Wow.
we placed them in homes. But if we rescued a dog that was too old or blind or epileptic and nobody would want it, what are we going to do with it? You know, we're not going to keep it in a cage. We might as well keep it in a shelter. So it would come home as our pet. So when you have two, getting a third is a big decision. When you have 26 and they tell you that they're going to put down a golden retriever at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you get there and you take it. So, yeah, we're way out of control. But it just sort of developed over time, and there was sort of like no way around it once we got into it.
Right. I was trying to imagine, and you set the scene very well, of walking into your house with all of these animals remarkably well-behaved. I would think it would be total chaos that one of them would walk into a room and another one wouldn't like one of the dogs, and they'd be barking and fighting with each other. But it sounds, all in all, like it's pretty calm.
Well, it's, you know, it's calm during the day when there's nothing happening. I mean, you know, right now, for instance, if a FedEx truck pulls up, it'll sound like a fox hunt in here.
It right? will.
You'll be able to hear me talk.
Oh, I hope that happens. No, just for a little while.
there's 12 in my office right now.
Oh, my gosh. People. They're all there with you right now?
They are.
Oh. Who's?
They're, you know, they're mostly old, so they're sleeping.
Right.
But, you know, like I said in the book, that when you walk around, if you walked around our house now, it would look like a Civil War battlefield. You know, there's like bodies everywhere and very quiet. But if somebody were to come in, or if a stranger were to pull up in a car, they would go crazy.
And there are at least six of them that sleep with you, right?
Oh, yes. A Mastiff, a Bernese Mountain Dog, two Great Pyrenees, and two Lab Mixes.
Oh, these aren't little guys we're talking about.
No, you want to sleep in our house, you get there early.
Right. So you're adopting dogs that are elderly and that have a lot of medical issues. These aren't just spry young dogs. They're dogs.
But those are the ones we take home.
Right.
Right, yes.
Why?
Why do we take those home? Or why
right.
Do we take those
why don't you take the young, healthy ones who will live with you for a long time?
Well, because we took a lot of young, healthy ones, but those are the dogs we placed in homes. The idea was to place them in homes.
Mm-hmm.
We actually, when we started, hadn't anticipated having a lot of dogs in our own house. But like I say, we would rescue dogs that were basically unadoptable. And therefore, what are we going to do? We're not going to put them down. We're not going to keep putting them back in a shelter. I mean, you know, and they're great dogs. It's not their fault.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the ones we brought home.
Yeah.
That sort of just evolved. That wasn't our intent.
Hmm. You don't have very good things to say about the shelter system in California. There are some that are good, but some that are awful, right?
Yeah, and I want to be careful about that. It's basically L.A. County.
Mm.
Terrible. I mean, there may well be other areas that are bad that I don't know about, but like Orange County is quite good. San Francisco is quite good. It's not all of California.
Mm-hmm.
But L.A. County is a disaster.
How did you find places to live, David? A couple dogs, three dogs even, maybe a neighbor could manage, but 25 dogs?
We lived in Santa Monica. Santa Monica is the only city in Southern California where you can have more than three dogs. And the law is as many as you can comfortably house. That's a subjective determination,
it
right?
It sure is, yeah.
So we were there, and of course we were in good with the shelter, local shelter, because if they had a dog they couldn't place, they would call us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we moved down to Orange County, and we lived in what they called the unincorporated areas, which is in the canyons, and it's run by the county. So there's, you know, it's the middle of nowhere. And here in Maine, we have 11 acres on a lake.
Oh.
No neighbors. It's just beautiful.
Oh, it sounds heavenly.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, let's get to the big part of the story, although there are so many dogs in between and wonderful stories about dogs that you really took to heart. But you decided that you were going to move, and it was a good idea from hearing what you just said about Maine, from California to Maine, which is, you know, hard enough for two people moving to the other side of the country, but you're taking 25 dogs with you. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was we thought about it for 5 years. You know, we bought the house in Maine, and then for when my wife eventually retired, and it took 5 years. And for 5 years, we had no idea how to do it. And finally, we just did it. I mean, the only way to do it was we got RVs. And we got, and like you said before, readers of mine who we didn't even know,
mm-hmm,
volunteered, and they flew into California, and they came cross-country with us. It was remarkable.
Hmm. Well, you had, when you did book tours for the mysteries that you had read and the thrillers you had written, you met people and you talked about dog rescuing at those meetings too, right? So you're reaching a very special group of people.
Yeah, most of my book signings, in fact, now all of them, are for, I do benefits for dog rescue groups.
Oh.
So I go there and I give a speech, and they, you know, they have a dinner, a cocktail party, and they charge admission. So they make a lot of money off of it. So it's dog, they're dog-friendly people that I'm talking to.
Right.
And so I would ask, as dog people, if they have any idea how we could do this. And we got some good ideas, and we also got some volunteers in the process.
Yeah, people you didn't even know who were willing. This is no small task. First, to drive an RV, which I don't think I could ever do. Secondly, to figure out how to get the dogs walked and relieve themselves when they get off the RV. And you're not talking about a small amount of time to travel across the country.
The lesson I learned from these people that agreed to help like that is never volunteer to help a friend. I'm telling you, it was just awful. But and they loved it. They thought it was like the greatest adventure of their life.
Well, you need to listen to what they had as an experience, right, and take it as your own.
I was the only curmudgeon in the group. The other, even Debbie loved it. They were like ready to lock arms and sing "Michael, Row Your Boat Ashore." I mean, they were like having the greatest time, and I was miserable every instant.
No, you weren't, David. I don't believe that for a minute. Or you
couldn't—you
couldn't have written this book. There's too much love in it, even though there are some complaints. So, what is it about this group of rescue people? I've rescued a few dogs, never from a rescue group, but I've taken in a lot of dogs. And but there is something special, and I'm wondering who the people were who you meet across the country. Who are they? Who rescue dogs?
There's a dog culture out there, and the only
They are.
And the quick story I could use to describe it is when our house was caught in the fires in California.
Yeah.
We thought we were evacuated, and we thought we lost the house.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow the word got out, and I got 171 emails from strangers offering us their house if we had to move to Maine. Then, so like you and 27 dogs can stay in our house.
Oh.
And it's really an example of that dog culture that's out there. I mean, these people, I meet rescue people around the country that make me look like a piker when it comes to rescue. I mean, they do 10 times more than we ever did.
Well, that's hard to believe because
they really do.
You did a lot.
Yeah, but these people have done it for 30 years. I mean, they're just, you know, and in places where it's really hard. I mean, the South is much worse than California, at least parts of the South.
Uh-huh.
These people just are there every day doing it.
So they do it, why? Because all living things should have a chance to live, or there is a particularly special bond between dogs and humans?
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak to cats. I'm sure that's the same with a lot of people, but there's a mindset, and one of the problems, when people dump their dogs in a shelter, it's a mindset of thinking that they're possessions. It's like getting rid of a car or a couch.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't think like that, and if you think a dog has feelings and experiences, fear and love and whatever, then you just can't let it suffer if you see it. You know, I mean, it's sort of like if you feel that way about dogs, you have to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people are, you know, love dogs but won't go into a shelter because they're afraid of what they're going to see. And that's a thing that we have to get over. But these are people who just love dogs and recognize what they are.
Before we go to phone calls, I know it's hard to ask a guy who's had thousands of them some of your favorites, but you do have dogs that are among your top five or whatever, and you'd have to start with Tara, the dog who got this whole thing started.
Right. She was my wife's dog we met, and she got cancer about a year after I met her, and the 3 months in which she died were like a transforming experience for us.
Mm.
I mean, like unbelievably intense. We never left her alone for a minute, and we probably made some mistakes. We probably kept her going longer than we should have.
Mm-hmm.
And in retrospect, I think we decided earlier that, you know, the quality of life is not there. But she was remarkable, and she definitely set us down the path.
And you've had other dogs that have been remarkable as well, right?
Yes, we have some now. I mean, I honestly think everyone we have here right now is a great dog. But there's some that we just have a special feeling for, and usually they're ones we've had longer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's no rhyme or reason to why, and it's not a particular type.
Yeah, well, you've got about 12 in the room with you right now. Do you want to talk about any of them, or will the others?
Well, I'm looking at 2 7-year-old Great Pyrenees sisters that my wife got while I was away. And they are if you've seen Great Pyrenees, they're like fluffy white hair.
Yeah.
And these came to us so matted that they couldn't be brushed out. So we shaved them down. But they don't shave their heads. So they look like Q-tips.
Oh, no.
Their head is like white and fluffy, and their bodies are short hair. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're adorable, and they're absolutely great.
Oh. And you take big dogs, don't you? Because
only.
It's harder to place big dogs?
Yes, we take only big dogs.
Yeah.
Bigger, and now, I mean, now all we do in Maine is, because it's so good here, the rescue system, is we just take in dogs that the shelter can't place.
Uh-huh.
Larger dogs that they can't place.
Huh. Isn't it really hard, though? You talked about how hard it was to put tar down, and I know how, oh, man, it can be just excruciatingly painful, although the process itself is quite peaceful when it has to be done. But isn't it terribly difficult to take these older dogs and know that, for the most part, you're not going to have them for very long?
Yeah, it is, and it was very difficult at first. Now you sort of like have to change your mindset, so now our attitude is we just focus on the fact that for whatever time they live with us, they were happy and loved and safe, and that's all we can do.
Mm-hmm.
And they bark a lot.
Who's it? Somebody's at the house,
sorry.
Right? No, it's
sorry,
all right. It's fine.
Yeah. I did a radio interview with Seattle a while back, and it was at night, and I was hiding in a closet upstairs to barking, and I told the interviewer that if he's lucky, he can announce in a few minutes that an author came out of the closet live on his show.
It's great.
Right now, I just went to hide in the laundry room.
Oh, no. All right, well, take a few deep breaths in the laundry room, and we'll welcome phone calls. David Rosenfeld is our guest, author of Dog Tripping, 25 Rescues, 11 Volunteers, and 3 RVs on our canine cross-country adventure. You may also know David as being a mystery writer. He's written a number of novels, Andy Carpenter novels. He lives in Maine with his wife and 25 dogs. And we're talking about rescue dogs, a lot of issues that go with that. Who are the people who rescue animals? What about the relationship, the bond between human beings and animals? What about the people who give up their animals? Who are they, for heaven's sake? And he writes about some of them in the book. They turn 8 years old and they can't run as fast, and I'm a jogger, so I'm done with this dog. Here, take it, shelter. 800-486-8655, email talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. David Rosenfeld is our guest. The book is Dog Tripping, 25 Rescues, 11 Volunteers, 3 RVs on Our Canine Cross-Country Adventure. David is now doing the interview from the laundry room because I think the FedEx person came to the house. So the 12 dogs who were sharing the space with him started to bark, which is okay. And we're welcoming phone calls. We have a ton of calls. Let's start with Bob in Milwaukee. Hello, Bob. Bob, are you there? Bob, before we listen to your other conversation.
Hello.
Yeah, there we go. Hi, Bob.
Sorry about that.
All right.
I'm actually ready to see some regulations of dog and cat breeding. I've had 3 dogs. I have 3 dogs and 2 cats as we speak. I've moved once renting with 3 dogs, and my entree into heaven is guaranteed, and I'm going to do it again shortly. So I don't know where my entree will be guaranteeing me next. But anyway, regulating cat and dog breeding to me makes a lot of sense, because how many people out there are willing to do what I do?
I'm not sure I understand what you do, Bob. Can you tell me again?
I've had 3 dogs since the early 90s.
Okay.
And I still have 3 dogs and 2 cats right now, and I'm about to move. Probably rent, and I've done it before once, and I dare anyone to try it.
So you rescued all the dogs?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I've never gone to look for them. They find me, and I've had some very difficult dogs.
David?
Yes. I don't know that much about breeding. There's some, I have mixed feelings about it. I mean, there's plenty of dogs right now, but I also would hate to see the breeds disappear. So, I would not like there not to be golden retrievers, for instance. So I think breeders are fine if they're doing it properly and under under regulations. Much more of a concern is spaying and neutering. I mean, the dogs, you know, that's a much bigger problem in terms of overpopulation of dogs, the lack of spaying and neutering.
How did most of the dogs find their way to animal shelters? Was it just careless owners who got tired of them, or what were the stories? Were there common themes?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost always that. If a dog goes stray and gets found, you should be able to find the dog if it's in a shelter. I mean, that's the point of the shelter, is they hold the dog for at least 5 days so you can come find it.
Mm-hmm.
So in one way or another, whether an owner just turns it in or whether an owner doesn't find it when it gets lost, it's definitely the owner's problem. And, you know, there are some cases that, you know, there's nothing you can do if you're, you know, if you have a medical problem, if you have no money, whatever. There's sometimes some reasons you can't take care of a dog, but there's very, very rare should you not be able to make allowances for it, should you not be able to find a rescue group, you know, or somebody to take it. If a dog winds up in a shelter, it's the owner's fault.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Bob, for the call. Kevin in Whitewater. Hi.
Hi. The one thing that we've found out through the years is that rescue dogs make you laugh until you cry. They're just so hilarious to deal with because dogs are the one animal on the planet. No matter what happens, they always smile and wag their tail at you.
And do you think that there's an element of, this may be far-fetched, but I think you suggested at some point that it's worth considering the rescue dog might be a little grateful. Yeah?
Well, trainers tell us we could never do what we do in our house, and I really think gratefulness is part of it.
Hmm.
But also what the caller said about the temperament of dogs, it's just remarkable. We rescued a dog that had cut marks on his nose. And we figured he had got into a fight or something. They were permanent marks. And the reason we took him is because the marks were unsightly, and therefore we thought he wouldn't get adopted.
Mm-hmm.
So we took him to a vet, and the vet found the same marks below his jaw. So his jaw had been wired closed, probably not so he wouldn't bark, right?
This
dog had the greatest disposition you can imagine.
Mm.
And he went to a home, and he actually lived 11 years after we placed him in a home, and he was fantastic. Mm. But the fact that they're not just stoic, they're more than that. They're just like so upbeat, even when, you know, when they shouldn't be, that it's amazing.
Mm.
Like the emotional opposite of me, you know, like they're upbeat all the time.
They haven't taught you how to be upbeat yet, David?
No, not quite. No.
You're on the way, though. It's not over yet.
Yeah.
thanks, Kevin, very much for the call. Joseph in La Crosse, hi. Joseph, are you there? Yeah, I don't know where you are, Joseph. Call us back. Randy in Sauk County. Hi, Randy.
Yeah, hi. Say, first of all, thank you for what you do. We had rescued a greyhound from a racetrack that was shutting down, and it was the best experience of our lives for the next 11 years. The kids were raised around it. I mean, the circumstances of getting it and everything were just fabulous. Anyway, this is my question, though, to you. Since you speak to rescue associations, and we live a long ways away from any of them, we had applied to get another greyhound because it was such a great experience that we found an association. I think it was in Milwaukee. I'm not sure. And we got a letter back. We filled out a big form. We got a letter back. You folks don't understand dogs. The dog would never thrive with you. You don't meet the profile. And here, this greyhound had just just lived out this fantastic life with us. And the rescue association said, it would be terrible to put a greyhound with you.
Hmm.
And so we wondered later if it's possible. We had heard other stories. Is it possible in the exuberance, in the wonderful motivation that folks have when they're involved in those things, that they might actually sometimes prevent just through, I don't know, profiling, incorrect profiling.
Oh, it's more than possible. It happens all the time.
Hmm.
I mean, they're in rescue land, they're considered rescue Nazis. You know, now I'm not speaking for that group. I don't know that group. But there are rescue groups that are so, vigilant in making sure that the dogs get into perfect homes that they wind up not putting enough dogs in enough homes.
Mm-hmm.
And since dogs are, you know, other dogs are being put down in shelters all the time, it's way over the top. So it sounds like your situation was an example of that.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about some of the places where you placed dogs. Usually you had really good experiences, but there were occasions where the people had taken on too much and brought dogs back to you.
Oh, yeah. And what a rescue group will do, we and others will do, is you sign a contract saying that if it doesn't work out, you're obligated to return it to us. So because the dog's under, once we rescue the dog, it's under our protection. And so that's how we feel about it. So, yes, and if it doesn't work out, and it could be for legitimate reasons, you know, you don't, when you rescue a dog from a shelter, you don't know a lot of its idiosyncrasies. I mean, we have them temperament tested, but who knows? Maybe they won't get along with your other dog, or maybe they'll, you know, have, well, we just got a dog the other day that has violent reaction to thunderstorms.
Oh.
I mean, violent.
Oh.
And it was shocking to us. He went through a screen in our house and ran down to a neighbor and went through their screen.
Oh, my gosh.
Right. So there could be situations where things you don't know happen to make it impractical for a certain home to have, you know, have the dog, and then you bring them back. That's a good thing about going to rescue groups, that you're not worried that you're returning them to a shelter where they're going to be put down.
Right.
You're returning them to somebody who's going to take care of them.
Right. So what did you do with the dog who ran out of the screen?
Well, we got him back, of course. And
right.
We're not sure what to do. I mean, our vet has suggested a couple of things, but it's fairly difficult. I mean, our dogs, even though he's a new dog that we got from Maine, our dogs never experienced thunderstorms in Southern California.
Oh, that's right.
So they've all been fine. It's the new dog from Maine, a golden retriever, that went nuts. So we're going to try and figure it out. But
there was a lovely little piece of, which dog was it who experienced snow for the first time and just never wanted to leave the backyard?
Oh, Bernese Mountain Dog. He goes outside when it snows. He lays down. It snows all over him.
Aww.
He gets up and shakes off and lays down again.
Oh, I
yeah,
like
we
that.
We actually felt guilty that we kept them in Southern California for so long.
I would imagine.
They loved the cold.
You probably felt the same way about keeping yourselves in Southern California for so long, too, right?
Yeah, we never really took to it.
Right.
We're from back east and never really liked Southern California.
Yeah, well, it sounds idyllic where you are now. Yeah. So tell me again, because I can't quite imagine, because I've got a dog and I want to do therapy work with dogs, so I need to take on, you know, in the next year and a half, I want to take on some more dogs. And everybody in my family says, you can't take on more dogs. Your dog is so spoiled. He would not have any other dog be in the house. And so I'm reading your book, and my dog is on my lap, and I'm thinking, holy Toledo, you've taken in 25. And everybody seems to get along with each other, and I don't know how you've done that, David.
Well, it's almost like they give up on the idea of a pack. It's
yeah.
Like, you know, they can't keep track anymore, so they like give up. So we bring a new dog in, and they develop relationships. They develop, you know, certain ones they wrestle with, certain ones they hang out with, but it's all like interchangeable, and there's no set order to it. It would be more difficult, actually, in a lot of cases, to bring a second dog into a one dog home than it would to bring a 26th into a 25 dog home.
So you're saying I need to bring in four?
At least four.
Yeah, right. Maybe 24. I don't think so.
Start with as many as you can get in your car, and then see how that works out.
How many can I get in my marriage is the question, right? That may not work out. I'm not sure. Well, it does sound. Is somebody doing? I know that somebody has suggested there be a movie made of this cross country journey, or a movie made of how you're living in Maine, which I think would be just lovely to see. Is anybody doing that?
There's a lot of interest in the movie. When we first made the trip, there was a lot of interest for a reality TV show. But they wanted to come live with us for 3 months after the trip.
Uh-huh.
And they wanted human conflict.
Right.
so it was like, life's too short, so we passed.
Right. You didn't need, you got peace. You don't need conflict when you got peace. Our phone number, let me give it to you once again because you're welcome. I'm really interested in hearing from those of you who have rescued a dog, or maybe you're a member of a rescue group. Maybe you've had a chance. The book is pretty new, but maybe some of you have had a chance to read David's book or some of his mystery writing as well. David Rosenfeld is our guest. 25 rescues, 11 volunteers, and 3 RVs. On a Canine Cross-Country Adventure. Dog Tripping is the name of the book. And David and his wife, Debbie, have 25 dogs. They're living in Maine now. These are all rescue dogs. And they're really just a small portion of thousands of dogs. I think I read 4,000 somewhere that they saved from shelter system. They made their home in California for a long time, but decided to move east. The dogs had to go with them. So this is not only the story of life in California and taking on the dogs, but the move from California to Maine, where they depended on the kindness of dog-loving strangers to help them. And it was a really good thing. That's what he writes about in this book. Our number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email, if you'd like to use that, is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page, if you'd like to leave a message there, we would like to have you do that. I think David has a Facebook, too. So we'll get his Facebook page so you can see some of these creatures. That is the Kathleen Dunn Show. What is it about a community? And I think this is really true. I really like people. It's not the only criteria, but there's something about knowing that a person likes dogs.
Yep.
There's something about dog people. And so you're the writer. Tell us what that bond is, why we like dog people.
Why we like dog people?
Right.
I don't know. I really have not a clue. But I can tell you this. The difference among people in Maine and in Southern California towards dogs is remarkable.
Is it really?
If we were in Southern California, let's say a workman came into our house, and when you walk in, you know, the dogs mob you. It's intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
And they would come in, like, you know, with panic in their face.
Hmm.
In Maine, people walk in like it's just another day at the office. I mean, it's no big deal. It's amazing. Everybody has a dog here. You can't, every car, every pickup truck, everybody has a dog.
Mm.
And I'm not saying that dog people are any better than other people, but, you know, I guess there's something about caring for an animal and protecting it and so on that, you know, that contributes to your being a good person.
Yeah. Well, it's really saying something if you've got workmen coming into your house because you just don't have a dog. You've got 25 dogs. You would think that most people would be a little bit flabbergasted, right?
I mean, you open the door to our house, and, you know, by the time a stranger would come open the door, then there's, you know, 15 dogs in front of him.
Right.
Her, and you're talking about, you know, the average dog we have is probably 80 or 90 pounds. So there's a lot of dog there. And they just walk in like it's nothing.
Right.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Yeah.
Let's go to Ann in Frankfort, Michigan. Hi, Ann.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm a dog lover and an animal lover of all kinds of animals. And I live in a residential neighborhood where the houses are close together. And I wonder how you would solve a situation where you have a neighbor who is a dog rescuer and she has four dogs, but she's not home most of the day. And they are so wound so tightly that everything, anything, sets them off, and they're barking all day long.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for those dogs, but it's the rescuer has to deal with it. I mean, they really do. It's not fair to people. I mean, we, you know, you don't want to be our neighbor, trust me. But, you know, when we lived in a place where we had neighbors, we took extraordinary steps to try and, you know, prevent barking or prevent the smell, you know, from where they go to the bathroom. So, you know, I can't say how she or he should keep those four dogs quiet, but you're not doing anything wrong if you demand that they take care of it.
Mm-hmm. Have you talked to them, Ann?
Many times.
And?
Yes, many times.
No, and what happens when you say something?
Oh, they seem to manage to keep the dogs quiet for a day or two, somehow. Mm-hmm. And then it goes back to how it was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if it's leaving a television on or leaving, you know, some people say if you leave articles of your clothing with your scent on it, you know, I mean, it depends on the individual dogs and situations. But there are ways to do it. I mean, there are collars. There are citronella collars that if a dog barks, there's a little spray of this gas that gets them to stop. It's harmless to them. I mean, there are definitely ways to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But they really need to deal with it.
Yeah, they do. Thanks, Ann, so much. Kathleen in Delafield, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say I have a little Maltese rescue. She was a breeder at a puppy mill.
Oh.
And although I've grown up with dogs all my life, when it comes to the rescues, it takes a little bit different way of going about getting them used to things, but it's so well worth it, and I wish they would close down all those puppy mills.
You've been careful about rescuing dogs from pet stores or from puppy mills, right? David, you don't normally do that.
You should never get a dog from a pet store.
Because?
Because they're getting them from puppy mills.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it's like the scourge of the breeding business. It's the worst thing to do is, because if you get one, then you're just supporting it, you know, and then they're going to go out and get another one. And the money's going to flow back to those breeders. And those breeders are generally terrible. It causes health problems in dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Getting a dog from a pet store is really, as well-intentioned as you might be, it's a bad thing to do.
Yeah. Thanks, Kathleen, for your call. Jeannie in Eau Claire, hi.
Hi. I'm enjoying this topic because you could very well be my son-in-law, who never had pets his entire life, came into my daughter's life, and she had dogs, cats, parrots, snakes, you name it. And they now are in Alaska. They have adopted 7 sled dogs besides her Shiba Inu. And they will be moving back down to the lower 48 in December, bringing the dogs and cats and birds with them, traveling. They're going to ship cats and birds if they can home. But anyway, my question is more regarding housing. They're going to be, he's in the military. They're going to be moving down to Georgia. And you are fortunate enough to have purchased a place in Maine with acreage. What kind of luck do you think they're going to have with that many dogs finding a place to rent for 3 years? I will be taking care of all the animals here until, you know, they'll be going down and looking for a place because they can't be ma and pa kettle with dogs and cats hanging out the windows. Looking for a place to rent, but what problems do you
I think they're going to have, they're likely to have a lot of problems. I mean,
right.
there's two issues for them. One is finding a place where you're allowed to have that many dogs, and that's generally in areas that are run by the county, and it's out of the way places, and they won't get to a city where you can have that many dogs or that many animals. So you have to find a place where you're allowed. And then the fact that they're renting is another issue because, renters a person renting their house will think that these animals could damage the house. So they'll have to put a deposit down, I would imagine, or they'll have to, make some allowances for, to make it palatable to the renter.
Mm-hmm.
So, it can be done. We did it. We rented our first house in Santa Monica, but it's difficult.
So they may have to make a decision as to whether or not they have too many.
Well, I would never say,
I know
many.
You wouldn't.
Yeah. They're just have to figure out a way to do it and find the right person, an animal-loving house owner or something. I mean, there's people out there. It can get done, but it's not easy.
Yeah. Thanks, Jeannie, for the call. Let's go to Ruth in Eau Claire. Hi, Ruth.
Yeah, hi. A couple of things. One, I just saw something in the on the internet today about the dogs, all the dogs being left in Detroit, and that they're absolutely overwhelmed by the rescue needs there. And then, which you may want to comment on, but my other comment is that we looked at a rescue dog once. We were very interested in getting a dog through rescue, and I read the contract. While they were there with the dog and we were visiting with them. And in the fine print were things that just were not acceptable to me, things like the dog would never be ours, that they owned the biology of the dog.
Oh.
And that if they ever decided they would take the dog back from us, we would owe them $2,000 in attorney fees for them.
Mm.
And I was just like, I'm sorry. If you rewrite the contract, we will consider this. But if you don't rewrite it, she said, well, we would never do that. And I said, well, then rewrite the contract. And she wasn't willing to do that. And then I found out that she had already repossessed the dog from another family And so you have to be careful out there with some of the rescue stuff and really read those contracts.
Yeah, well, that sounds pretty shady to me, David.
Yeah, that, I mean, I had never heard of that, so I'm sure it must be very rare. More of a problem is finding some groups, like I was saying before, that won't give you the dog. Usually once you have the dog, first of all, if those groups are as rigorous as they are in making sure it's a good home, then they should be less concerned that they're going to have to get the dog back. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, the more you check the adopter, the less need there is to worry about what will happen down the road. I've just never heard anything like that, and I wouldn't take a dog from them either.
Our guest this hour is David Rosenfeld. His book is Dog Tripping, 25 Rescues, 11 Volunteers, and 3 RVs on Our Canine Cross-Country Adventure. Here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number for David Rosenfeld is 800-486-8655. You say, and I would like to hear about a couple of the dogs you choose to talk about, that it's often fascinating to watch dogs' personalities, David, evolve once they're in your house. Are you surprised sometimes by the dog that emerges after he or she's been there for a while?
Yeah, it's actually pretty amazing. We just got a dog last week, about 2 weeks ago. The breed they think it is a Maremma, M-A-R-E-M-M-A, which I never heard of.
But no.
She's a beautiful white dog who was left to fend for herself, apparently, like in the woods.
Mm.
And they found her, and she was basically feral. And she came to our house, and she was scared to death. And 2 weeks later, she's one of the pack.
Like,
hangs out with us in the living room. She jumps onto bed during the day. It's amazing to watch. It really is. It's remarkable. But generally, if we brought a new dog into our house and you came in 10 minutes later, you wouldn't be able to tell which the new dog was. They just assimilate almost immediately. And it's amazing.
Craig in Chicago. Hi.
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 I just wanted to validate everything that David is saying.
Well, this is my favorite call so far.
And my wife, I wish she would be listening right now. I don't think she's on, though. My wife and I have had at least 4 dogs, typically 4 dogs, all elderly for the last 15 years. And our family, and we've gone through a few of them ourselves, I think within our household, 7 total. A few have died over the years. And over in our family, between 3 households, well over 20 dogs have been rescued, all elderly.
Terrific.
And, yeah, everything that David's saying is exceptionally perfect.
let's keep this guy on the phone long.
Right. Invite him out to see you. He can be with you every day to tell you that. Thanks, Craig, very much for the call. Linda on email sends, took a trip this weekend with my husband and we listened to David's book, Play Dead. Must be based on his experience with a dog who had his mouth wired. Very heartwarming. My husband totally enjoyed it. We now have 3 rescue dogs and at one time had 13 dogs.
I'll tell you something about Play Dead. I wrote 5 books in that series, and they got some awards, and they were doing nicely. But I was going to stop and do something else, and then Play Dead came out, and it was the first one where a dog was integral to the plot.
Mm.
So they put a golden retriever on the cover,
mm-hmm.
and the book went crazy. Right, it sold twice as many books as any previous one of mine. And people would email me and say, "Listen, I'm embarrassed to tell you this, but I only bought it because of the cover." But it was amazing. I mean, so from now on, every book in that series will have a dog on the cover no matter what.
Mm. So that's why Dog Tripping has 6 dogs on the cover. And
well,
you.
Well, Dog Tripping deserves to have dogs
that's
on the
right.
cover.
That's yeah. true. Let's go to Lynn in Eau Claire. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Like your caller, a couple callers ago, Ruth, I came upon the same sort of trouble, and I was desperately looking for a companion animal. We met up with a young woman who was going through a divorce, living with her parents. She had a big, big dog and a little dog. Duke is, he was Doc, he's now Duke. He's living it with us. We have kind of an open adoption. He's ours, but I send her pictures. You know, I tell her how he's doing. And he's amazing. He has changed our lives.
How's he done that?
Wonderful. And he plays with Ruth. Ruth has two dogs, Ben and Honey, and Ben and Duke are buddies.
Oh.
Yeah.
And
you
how...
know, if there's one thing, I mean, people ask me if there's a message in a book, and the one thing I wish I could get across is that before I started in a rescue, I would think that if a dog was in a shelter, then it was put there, and therefore it must have some problem. And if I would take it, then it would be, I would be inheriting that problem. And that is just a complete fantasy. The dogs are not there because of the problems that they have. They're there because of the problems their owners have.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wish more people would understand that.
Yeah. Thank you, Lynn, for sharing that experience. Nice story. Nikki in Madison, hi.
Hi. First of all, thank you so much for what you do. I just applaud you. I'm a volunteer at our shelter here and have been for a dozen years, and I just wonder if you have any insight as to why we get in countless strays every day, and most of them, or at least many of them, appear to be in good shape, appear to be dogs that were well taken care of, but they do not get redeemed. And it just boggles my mind. We started a stray committee to do more advertising that our shelter exists. And I just continue to wonder how this can happen as often as it does when the dogs seem to have been well cared for.
Yeah, it's remarkable. We get we used to get dogs that were, 11 years old and well cared for, but this dog didn't jump over a fence and get away. And it's just like when people get tired of them, they just, in California, they drive up to Lancaster where the desert is and just let them out of their car.
Oh.
Then very often you'll get people that'll come into a shelter and tell you that they found the dog stray, even though they're the owners.
Oh.
So there's just no understanding it. I mean, there really isn't. And like the person you referred to before was a guy who came to us with a 9-year-old golden who couldn't keep up with him when he jogged anymore. So he was turning him in. So this dog was well cared for. But it's like a different mindset. It's like you take care of your car, but you're quite willing to trade it in for a different car.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they feel about dogs.
And it's hard to believe that they took good care of the dogs during the years at their homes, because how in the world can you just let a dog off in the desert? Wouldn't it keep you awake at night? What happened to my dog?
Apparently not. I mean, I don't understand it. I can't identify with it, but it's out there. It really is.
Mm. Let's go to Nikki. Thanks. Kathleen in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I am a good, responsible dog owner because I don't have a dog, and that's a choice. I don't have that time. I'm not going to mess up a dog by taking on a responsibility, and I can't meet it. So.
Well, it is a lot of responsibility, David, isn't it? It's, you have to know what you're doing and want to do it.
It's absolutely responsibility, but it's also, and if somebody doesn't want a dog, they shouldn't have a dog. There's nothing wrong with that. But, some people will tell you, I can't have a dog because I'm in an apartment, or I can't have a dog because we don't have a yard to run around in.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want a dog, those aren't good reasons, because you can get an older dog that's less active. You can get, you get a dog walker, you come home and walk it once a day. I mean, there are ways to get around that stuff. But if you don't want a dog or don't think you could care for it properly, then it's perfectly fine not to get one.
Let's go to Peter in Soldiers Grove, probably our last caller. Hi, Peter.
Hi. I had a comment on the dog that was afraid of lightning, and also a comment on why some rescue places will not give you a dog. The lightning, we have the same thing. Every Labrador we have had at the age of 6, now this is everyone except one over a period of 35 years, has become afraid of lightning at 6 years old.
Hmm.
We found a product called Clomacalm, C-L-O-M-E-C-A-L-M. I believe that's the way it's spelled. It's for separation anxiety. Actually, it's a drug for people.
Uh-huh.
And you give it to the dog for 30 days. Every day for 30 days, and then you wait until there's a thunderstorm that's forecast. If it's forecast in the afternoon, you give the dog the pill in the morning. Otherwise, or you give it to him a few hours before the storm.
I'm sorry, but we're out of time here. Have you heard about that, David? Do you?
I haven't heard about that one. There's others. The problem for us is that in the summer, there not a morning goes by that they don't say there's a 20% chance of thunderstorms.
Right, right.
So, you know, so I don't know what the effect of the medication is. We don't want to keep them highly
right.
medicated. You know?
Yeah. What is your, do you have a website so people can see the doggies?
Yeah, I do. It's very cleverly called davidrosenfeld.com. And I'm sorry about this, but I was told by my police chief of Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin friend, Tony Bruce, that I have to say, go Packers.
Ah, okay, I think you have to say it. All right. Thanks, David. David Rosenfeld, our guest. The book is Dog Tripping. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and KP Whaley for producing this program. Great conversations ahead.